ॐ अग्निचमिनन्दस्य जनजनशलकया चक्षुसमिलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्तुपितं येन भूतले स्वयं प्रकटमयं ददति सर्वनन्तिकम् We're up to the fifth chapter of the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. And prior to this chapter, in chapter four, we've been hearing about a discussion inside of a discussion. Because Suta Goswami is describing to the sages who have gathered in the holy place known as Namasharanya, and he is repeating to them the conversation that took place between Maharaj Prickett, the king who had only 7 days to live, and the great sage Sukadev Goswami. But now Maharaj Prickett has asked Sukadev Goswami to tell about Krishna's dealings with the creation and the maintenance and the destruction of the material world, and to reply to that the questions of Maharaj Prickett, Sukadev Goswami begins to tell a story. So therefore it's a story inside of a story. And here we are hearing the story inside of the story inside of the story. So, in the fifth chapter, and it will go on for quite a few chapters, Narada Muni, and then we're going to go one level deeper later on, a story inside of a story inside of a story inside of a story. But here, Maharaj Prickett is hearing Sukadev Goswami's words describing how one day Narada Muni, who is the great sage, Nara means humans and Da means giver. So Narada means he who gives to humans the greatest thing, because he gives bhakti or devotion to humans. But here we don't see him as the great giver of devotion, even though Narada Muni is always a great saint, a great sadhu. But we see him rather as the son of Lord Brahma, the creator, the primary demigod, who is in charge of the masterminding of the universe. He is basically empowered by the Lord with the ability to create the universe. So his son, Narada, is asking a question. Now, in the first 8 verses of this chapter, we're going to hear Narada's questions. So I'm going to read those through fairly quickly, speaking a little bit, and then we'll go over them slowly. And then we'll hear the beginning of Brahma's reply. Now, Brahma, again, has created the universe. Not exactly created it, but he has taken such a powerful role in the creation of the universe that everyone is under the impression that he is the one who's creating it. So I'm going to read these verses. Sri Narada Muni, remember, this is Sukadev Goswami telling Maharaj Prickett this story, and on top of that there is Suta Goswami repeating what Maharaj Prickett is saying to, excuse me, what Sukadev is saying to Maharaj Prickett. So Narada Muni asked Brahma, Lord Brahma. Now, listen to how sweetly he speaks. He's asking questions, and one could say they're even very sensitive questions. But he's speaking so with such etiquette and sweetness. O chief amongst the demigods, O firstborn living entity, I beg to offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So Narada says, please tell me that transcendental knowledge which specifically directs one to the truth of the individual soul and the super soul. So by understanding the question that he's going to ask, the answers to the questions he's going to ask, one will understand the living entity and the supreme living entity, the creator of this world, the creator and maintainer of this world, the Lord, the super soul. So these questions will lead to that understanding. My dear father, Narada continues, please describe factually the symptoms of this manifest world. Now, what is the very nature of this manifest world? What is its background? That means, what is behind it? Because we usually see very superficially. But what is in depth behind what is going on? Just like if we walk into the train system, we get on our train and we ride to the center of town and then we get off and then we come back, we put our ticket in the machine and come back. And that's all we think about. But we don't think about what is the background behind all this. What is it making it go on so efficiently and smoothly? We don't usually consider that. We live on the surface only. Narada is not on the surface. He's asking, what is the background of this universe? How is it created? How is it conserved? How is it maintained? And, of course, when something is created and when something is being maintained, maybe you could open the window a little. Under whose control is this all being done? Because if something's being maintained and something's being created, someone has to be the maintainer and the creator. It's not that the train system in this city just happened, appeared. No, it took so much work to make it occur, and so much work to make it run smoothly. He continues, my dear father, all this is known to you scientifically. You know the answers to these questions. Because whatever was created in the past, whatever will be created in the future, or whatever is being created at present, as well as everything within the universe, is within your grasp. Just like a walnut. Flower. Walnut. In other words, the person who has a walnut in his hand, it's not that it's so big. It's not that it is so big that he can't conceive of it. It is small. What happened to it? One can conceive of it. One can understand what it's like by keeping it in the hand. So Brahmaji, being the creator of this world, is the correct person to ask this question, because he's the one who has done it. So he's the one to ask about the creation. If you ask me about how the Perth train system works, I'm not going to know anything about it except the superficialities, because I don't have anything to do with it. You ask the person who designed the system or put it into operation. So Narada is asking Brahma, my dear father, what is the source of your knowledge? How do you learn how to do this? Under whose protection are you standing? And under whom are you working? What is your real position? Do you alone create all entities with the material elements by your personal energy? Are you the one who is doing everything? Creating everything? Is it done all by on your own power? Or is there someone behind you? And he gives an example in the fifth text. As a spider very easily creates the network of its cobweb and manifests its power of creation without being defeated by others, so also you yourself, by employment of your self-sufficient energy, create without without others' help. In other words, we see a spider. When a spider is building his web, he doesn't go and gathers some, like the birds when they build their nests, they gather some something or another from here, some straw from there, some string from there, they fly over there, get some feathers, this, that, some paper or whatever, and they put it in there. But spiders don't do that. Everything comes from within their body, and then it's taken up within their body again. So similarly, Narada is asking, are you the spider in this regard? Have you created the universe like the spider creates its web? Is it just coming from you? Is there nothing needed external from you? Or do you have someone who is behind you, giving you the power? Whatever we can understand by the nomenclature, the names, the characteristic and features about a specific thing, superior, inferior, equal, eternal, or temporary, is not created from any source other than that of your Lordship. Thou art so great. So everything I know has come from you. So please, you please tell me. Yet, so here's the contradiction. It's explained in this verse why he's asking these questions. He's saying everything appears to come from you, yet we are moved to wonder about the existence of someone more powerful than you. When we think of your great austerities and perfect discipline, although your good self is so powerful in the matter of creation, you have performed austerities. Austerities are meant to please another. Is there another who you must please to get your power? My dear Father, you know everything. And you are the controller of all. Therefore, may all that I have inquired from you be kindly instructed to me, that I may be able to understand it as your student. So he's asked some very, very sensitive questions in a very sweet way. So why? Because he's the most gentle soul. But aside from that, he wants to get the answers. He wants to understand this, and he knows he's approached the right source. As the first verse in this chapter explains, he offers his obeisances to Brahma and requests him, you please tell me this, because the answers to this question, the questions that I'm asking, they're going to lead to the deepest knowledge about the soul and the super soul and the relationship between the individual and the supreme. So this is an approach, even though Brahma is the father of Narada, this is an approach to guru by disciple. And Narada Muni, he's asking Brahma, and we will hear later how Brahma gets his knowledge directly from the Supreme Lord. So Brahma gets, there is the Lord who is the source of all knowledge, then he gives it to Brahma, and then Brahma, based on the inquiries of Narada, gives the knowledge to Narada, and Narada gives it to Vyasa. We've heard that in the first canto, in chapter 4, 5, 6, 7. And then Narada gives it to Vyasa. Vyasa gives it to his son Sukadeva. And Sukadeva gives it to Maharaj Prickett, and Suta Goswami is there when Prickett Raj is hearing. And Suta Goswami gives it to the same knowledge to the sages of Namastranya. This is called Guru Parampara, the cyclic succession. So he's asking here, my dear father, in the second verse, we've heard this already, we'll go through it one more time. Please describe factually the symptoms of the manifest world. What is its background? How is it created? How is it conserved? And under whose control is all this being done? Now, this is the essential question. Whose control is this being done? Who is the control of the whole thing? Again, when something is being created, when something is being maintained, when something's being destroyed, these things simply do not happen by chance. No one in this world has the experience of something that is well organized, maintained well, created well, dismantled well, that just happens by chance. Even though the scientists claim that chance is the primal ordering ingredient of this world, still, when they have their own houses built, they don't leave it to chance. When they perform their experiments, they don't leave it to chance. When they get dressed in the morning, when they cook, just imagine even if they left their cooking to chance. Prabhupada explains in his purport. The inquiries by Narada Muni on the basis of factual cause and effect appear very reasonable. It's natural. When there is, the effect is organized, naturally one assumes that there is a cause that has organized it. If the cause has organized something with great, great intelligence, is it possible for the effect to have more than the cause? No, because the effect is coming from the cause. So the cause is the source of the effect. Therefore, if the effect or this material world is so organized with such intelligence and so stringently strict that no one can break the laws. It's not someone can get older and then be a criminal against the law of God and decide to get younger again despite propaganda. No, it doesn't happen. No one can break the law that everyone must die, everyone must get old, everyone must get diseased. So that means that if the law is so stringent, that means that the enforcer of the law is so powerful. He's intelligent and powerful. So naturally, when we don't look superficially, naturally we ask, who is this intelligence behind this all? Who is this power behind all this? Intelligence and power are characteristics. It can't be impersonal. Because impersonal means devoid of characteristics. So what are the ultimate characteristics of the one who is behind masterminding this incredible creation? So he's asking very reasonable questions. Who? The atheists, however, put forward many self-made theories without any touch of cause and effect. If the universe or souls just come into effect by chance, they just happen. How come we don't see any happening, just like we're walking down the street and then a universe becomes manifest? I mean, at least once in my life I should have seen it. or at least someone must have seen it. Just by chance? So Prabhupada very strongly says they have their explanations. They're calling themselves scientists, but they have their explanations, but their explanations don't have anything to do with cause and effect. They talk about the effect without a cause. Where in anyone's experience have we ever seen an effect without a cause? So the manifested world, as well as the spirit soul, is still unexplained by the godless atheist through the medium of experimental knowledge, although they have put forward many theories manufactured by their fertile brains. Contrary to such mental speculative theories of creation, however, Narada Muni wanted to know all the facts of creation in truth and not by theories. It could be like this, it may be like that. He wants to know, and he's asked the person, Brahma, who took part in the creation. So he's asking the right person. Now, in regard to the nature of the soul itself, Srila Prabhupada is now going to explain to us very similar points, if we will put on the tape.
There are many theories and philosophical speculation all over the world about understanding the soul. Therefore, Krishna is concluding that somebody is explaining wonderfully, somebody is hearing wonderfully, but even after hearing and speaking, it remains a mystery, and less intelligent person cannot understand. That is the fact. There are so many theories. Therefore, we have to accept the reality from the authority. By theorizing, by speculating, we cannot come into any decision. I may be very good logician, you may be greater logician. So you can defeat my logic, I can defeat your logic. So, what is the conclusion? This kind of talking, it is called kutarka, unnecessary talking. Because you will not come to my decision, I will not come to your decision. So, everyone is mysterious. So, in this way, we cannot understand which is beyond the perception of our knowledge. Achinta khulde bhava natastha kena jujar. Things which are beyond our perception, we should not simply try to understand by logic and argument. It is useless waste of time. Well, nobody can decide theory. The modern so-called scientists, they also like that. Perhaps it may be that. It may be millions of years it was like this. It may be. What is the value of saying it may be? Say definite. That they cannot do. All the scientists' theory, like perhaps, maybe, perchance, if it comes to be true. So, such kind of argument has no value. Therefore, our Shastra says, achinta kriyo bhava, beyond your perception, beyond your sense perception. Don't try to understand it by argument and logic. Then how to know it? And know it from the person who knows it. That is knowledge. Just like we are trying to get knowledge about the soul, not by experiment, but we are trying to understand from the words of Krishna. Krishna is the authority. So, he says in the beginning, Dehinasminyathadehe kaumarajopananjara. We can, Krishna says, and we can think over it and ponder over it, then we come to conclusion. And the other process, basic process is, jasya devi parabhakti yatha devi tatha guru tasya ide paditaya ta pradasanti maha. Our process is descending process. We are not trying to understand by the ascending process. In that you are leader. We accept the statements of the Veda. Therefore, we haven't got to make much effort to understand it. Veda vacham, Shruti, Shruti pramana. There are three kinds of evidences, direct perception, and evidence from the Vedas, and evidence from history. Vaidincha. Pratyakha vaidincha shruti. Three kinds of evidence. So pratyakha and vaidincha is neglected. According to our Vedic system, shruti pramana. If it is statement is there in the shruti, in the Vedas, then we accept.
So that is the process. If the statement is there in Shastra, in the Vedas, it is accepted, not through speculative reasoning. So therefore, Brahma is going to answer the questions because he's heard the answers from Krishna. Prabhupada explains in the second half of the purport to two. Transcendental knowledge regarding the soul and the supersoul includes knowledge of the phenomenal world and the basis of its creation. In the phenomenal world, three things are factually observed by any intelligent man. There are three things that everyone sees: the living beings, the manifest world, and the ultimate control over them. So everyone perceives this. The intelligent man can see that neither the living entities nor the phenomenal world are creations of chance. One time I was walking with Srila Prabhupada in Japan, and we were walking, and there was a mountain type of walk, and there were many, many, many trees on the mountain. And Prabhupada pointed and said, if chance was the creator, then at least one tree would not be pointing to the sun by chance. But every one of them is pointing to the sun. So how is there chance? That means there is an orderer. That means there is a creator. That means there is a controller. Where is the chance? At least one tree would be pointing in the opposite direction. No. So the intelligent person can see, but we don't see with our eyes. We don't see. We look, but we don't see. But an intelligent person, one whose intelligence pierces the superficiality of things, he can see that neither the living entity nor the phenomenal world are creations by chance. There is an orderer. The symmetry of creation and its regulative actions and reactions suggest the plan of an intelligent brain beyond them. It doesn't prove it, but it suggests it. And by genuine inquiry, so when it suggests that there must be someone behind this, then one has to ask, who is this person? And by genuine inquiry, one may find out the ultimate cause with the help of one who knows them factually. And as Prabhupada explained, to find out these causes, we go to Guru and Shastra. We go to the spiritual master, and we go to the scriptures. So Narada continues. My dear father, you know this scientifically, because whatever is created in the past, the present, everything is known by you. You are like the manager of a place. He has put the system together, so he has grasp of it. So he's the right person to ask about the background, the backing behind it. Where does the idea come from? Where does the money come from, etc.? He knows. He's dealing with it. So therefore, Narada asked Brahma. And then he asks again, what is the source of your power? Are you doing this all on your own? Like a spider who is taken, we see this, the spider, he puts out his webs, and then you knock the web and he falls down, and the web is manifest, and he goes, and it's gone. So Narada is asking, are you like that? Everything is simply coming from your energy, and then it goes back into you? Is that the situation, or is there someone behind you feeding you this? Where is it? Where is the universe coming from? Is it all you? And then he explains, is it by employment of your self-sufficient energy? Are you creating without any other's help? As far as I'm concerned, whatever we can understand in this world by the name and the characteristics of a particular thing, superior, no matter what its position is in the material world, whether it's eternal or temporary, it seems to be created by no one other than your lordship. You are so great, it appears that way, but, and then in text 7 again, this explains why he's asking the question, but we are moved to wonder about the existence of someone more powerful than you when we think of your great austerities, because Brahma, as we're going to hear in future chapters, especially in chapter 9. He performed austerities for thousands of years to get the potency to be able to create the world. That potency came directly from Krishna. When Krishna was pleased with him, he gave him the ability to understand how to create the material world. Otherwise, Brahma himself had no idea how to do it. He was completely bewildered. Like Srila Prabhupada said about his Guru Maharaj, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he performed great austerities to begin this Krishna consciousness movement. He chanted stories that Prabhupada would tell, that he chanted so many thousands and thousands and thousands of names of Krishna, Mahamantras in Mayapur. He performed austerities, and then by Mahaprabhu's mercy he got the power to do this. And Prabhupada also empowered to do something wonderful. Our power is so tiny. So when Narada heard or knew that Brahma had performed so much austerity to get the power, that means that the power is not within him. Means it's coming from some external source. So he wanted to know, who is that external source? Even though you're so powerful, we've seen what you've done, there must be a source external to you. My dear father, you know everything. You're the controller of all. Therefore, may all that I have inquired from you be kindly instructed to me. Please answer my questions. Please, I've put these questions to you as your student, and please now reply to me. Now, and we're going to read the next few chapters of basically Narada's the reply by Lord Brahma to Narada's questions. So we'll read a few of those from 9 to 13 today. Here's the first thing that Lord Brahma said. My dear boy Narada, being merciful to all, including me, because Narada Muni is famous throughout the world as being merciful. You have asked all these questions because I have been inspired to see into the prowess of the Almighty Personality of Godhead. Now listen to Prabhupada's purport, very interesting. Brahmaji, being so questioned by Naradaji, congratulated him. For it is usual for the devotees to become very enthusiastic when they are questioned concerning the Almighty Personality of Godhead. That is the sign of a pure devotee of the Lord. Such discourses on the transcendental activities of the Lord purify the atmosphere in which such discussions are held. So when someone asks questions about Krishna, it gives someone else an opportunity to hear the answers. And the first result is the atmosphere is purified, and the devotees thus become enlivened while answering such questions. It is purifying both for the questioners and one who answers the questions. The pure devotees are not only satisfied by knowing everything about the Lord, but are also eager to broadcast the information to others. Thus, for they want to see that the glories of the Lord are known to everyone. Thus the devotee feels satisfied when such an opportunity is offered to him. That is the basic principle of missionary activities. So the person who speaks is benefited, the person who hears is benefited, the atmosphere is purified, and the glories of the Lord are spread, pleasing to everyone. So the first thing that Brahma does, interestingly enough, as we have just heard, he thanks Narada Muni for giving him the opportunity, for asking those questions, and thus giving him an opportunity to speak about Krishna. Now, we heard how Narada thought, he's asking Brahma, I've seen you create the world practically, the universe. Now, you have said, or rather, I've seen you create everything, and therefore I'm thinking that you are the creator, but yet I have this doubt because I see you performing austerities. So Brahma replies, whatever you have spoken about me is not false. So you have seen, he's saying, you have seen that I have created the world, the universe, more than the world. And therefore, in your mind, you have assumed that I am the creator. Now, Brahma is saying, that makes sense to think that I am the creator because you're seeing it. So it's not false because unless and until one is aware of the personality of Godhead, unless you understand the person behind me who is giving me the power, who is the ultimate truth behind me, unless you understand, have knowledge about who is empowering me, because Lord Brahma is a guna avatar. He is an avatar. He is, practically speaking, he is given the Lord's potency of passion to control and maintain. And with that, he's given the Lord's intelligence. He is empowered, infused with Krishna's intelligence as far as the creation of the material world is concerned. He's carrying that with him. That energy is infused within him. And he's doing such amazing things with that energy. So of course, naturally, unless one understands Krishna, one's going to think Brahma is the creator. So, unless you're aware of the personality of Godhead, who is the ultimate truth beyond me, one is sure to be illusioned by observing my powerful activities. Prabhupada explains, or he makes... In the purport, in the first paragraph, he tells the story about Dr. Frog. It's a frog in the well, a very famous ISKCON story that Prabhupada would tell, that how there was a frog in the well. How big is a well? How big is an Aussie well? How big? Not how deep it is, but how at the bottom, just a typical well at the... Now they have two wells. Huh? Yeah? Okay, so there's a frog deep inside of a well. And he's thinking, what does he think? This is all he knows. He's been born in that well. He's thinking, this is big. So one day, another frog jumps down into that well, and that frog has come from the ocean. He has seen the ocean. And he tells the frog in the well, I have just seen the ocean. And it's really big. How big? It's really big. Now, the frame of reference that the frog in the well has of what is big is... And the frame of reference of the frog that the ocean, who's seen the ocean has, he knows something that's inexhaustibly big, inconceivably big. So he says, the frog in the well says, it's big, how big is it? And he says, it's really big. One is thinking of the ocean, and the other is thinking of his well. So when he thinks of his well, and this is bigger, you mean it's as big as my well? It's bigger than my well? He said, you don't know how big the ocean is. You mean it's two times as big as my well? I mean, I've just seen the ocean. The ocean is huge, it's vast. You mean it's four times as big as my well? And as Prabhupada explains, so as he's it's this big, and he's puffing his body up because frogs can puff their body up. And he says, you mean it's 10 times as big as my well? And he puffs his body up even more, and then he pops and dies without understanding the breadth of the ocean. It is inconceivable. How many wells does it take to make an ocean? So Prabhupada explains that unless one understands what powerful means, then one is naturally thinking that someone in this material world is doing something. is creating something. We see this in the material world all the time, but actually no one is creating or doing anything in the material world. There's a power behind them, and that power is ultimately Krishna. The Prabhupada explains in the purport, or he asks an interesting question. Naradaji is one of the liberated souls. He's already an exalted personality, and he's asking these questions to Brahma. And after his liberation, he was known as Narada. Otherwise, before his liberation, he was simply a son of a maidservant. The question may be asked why Naradaji was not aware of the Supreme Lord, and why he misconceived Brahmaji to be the Supreme Lord, although he was factually not. So why is Narada even asking this question? A liberated soul is never bewildered by such a mistaken idea that someone else is the Supreme Lord other than the Lord. So why did Naradaji ask all those questions just like an ordinary man with a poor fund of knowledge? There was such bewilderment in Arjuna also, although Arjuna is eternally the associate of the Lord. Such bewilderment in Arjuna or in Narada takes place by the will of the Lord, so that other non-liberated persons may realize the real truth and knowledge of the Lord. The doubt arising in the mind of Narada about Brahmaji becoming all-powerful is a lesson for the frogs in the well, that they may not be bewildered in misconceiving the identity of the personality of Godhead, even by comparison to personalities like Brahma. So what to speak of ordinary man who falsely pose themselves as God or an incarnation of God. So people just don't have an idea of what it means to be God. I mean, not all people, but it is a contemporary, it's always been there, but even in contemporary pop culture, people are continuously thinking that they're the supreme. This is pop psychology. We're all God. It's all one. We are the supreme. Ultimately, I am the supreme. I am God. People think like this. That is because no one really thinks deeply about it, because they don't have knowledge of who God is. There's different types. There are the people who are not philosophical, who just say, oh, everyone is God. And then there are the people who are philosophical and actually have some philosophy about how everyone is God. But in any case, how is it possible that we are God? Is it we who are moving the universe, the stars, making the sun? Are you making the sun rise? Come on, tell me honestly. You can be frank. Not recently, and not in the far... You're bluffing, because that implies it may have been done in the far past, or it may be done in the future. No. You have never done it. Admit it, and you never will do it. So we're not making it rain and making it cold and make the heat come and make the plants grow and make the weeds grow and make the birds fly in the sky and the sun rise and the stars twirl at night. No. So is it possible that we are God? Or some people, the great philosophers who were in this illusion, they say we are God but have forgotten. But is that possible? Who is going to make God forget? Is illusion, forgetfulness, stronger than God, that it imposes itself on God to make you forget? Oh, this is, and then there's others who say, this is just God's lila or pastime or play for his enjoyment. You mean that all this suffering that people are going through, it's God doing this to himself to get his enjoyment? He's some sort of a sadomasochist pervert? That he can't get enough pleasure, that he has to flagellate himself with death and AIDS and wars in Bosnia and what's the new one going on in near Albania? Yeah, that one. The killing, ethnic cleansing, and threat of world wars and nuclear weapons and biochemical weapons. This is God getting pleasure? So what knowledge do people have of God to be thinking like this? It means nothing. Zero. So therefore, Narada is asking these questions by Krishna's arrangement. Even though he is the most exalted, full of knowledge, liberated person, he's asking these questions. So we will hear the answer. So we will know what God actually is. So we, who, that the power, when we say God, we mean certain things. So that we won't mistake ordinary human beings who say, oh, I am God, or everyone is God. We won't be bewildered into that. Narada Muni, by his mercy, is asking Brahma the questions to give us knowledge so we can progress without bewilderment. We will find out, by studying the Bhagavatam, we will find out who, what it means to be God in this canto and the next canto. We will find out what it means to be God. Then, when we hear about Krishna in the 10th canto, when we understand that he is God, we will understand that even though he is playing the part of an ordinary, he's doing Naralila, he's playing the part of an ordinary boy, and he's looking young, and he's herding the cows, and he's walking around, but his power, his knowledge, although he is acting as if he was a human, his potency, power, knowledge, opulence, strength, beauty, renunciation, wealth, is completely different than ours is, as insignificant, teeny, powerless, practically speaking, dependent jiva souls. So we're being prepared for this. We're being prepared to meet Krishna so that we, when we meet him finally, we will not mistake his activities as being like ours, so we can foolishly say, well, if he's God, well, I'm God. If it all takes is having a peacock feather in your head. No. Therefore, we should never imitate the activities of Krishna. All his pastimes are fully worshipable, even though they are Naralila, or they are appearing like ordinary. But once one understands what God is, how powerful God is, that makes it even more wonderful, Krishna's pastimes. So Prabhupada spends much purport space decrying this we are all God, I am God, and cheap incarnations. So then Brahma continues. I create, speaking very plainly, I create after the Lord's creation by his personal effulgence known as the Brahma Jyoti. Just as when the sun manifests its fire, the moon, the firmament, the influential planets, and the twinkling stars also manifest their brightness. So the sun, all the light within this that we see is coming from the sun ultimately. The electrical light is coming from the sun. All light, even the fossil fuels, come from the sun energy. Everything is coming, all light is coming from the sun. Although someone may think that it is independently effulgent, independently giving up its own light, like the light bulbs up here. So Brahma is saying that my potency in creating is simply on the secondary level. That Krishna has created within Brahma Jyoti, according to this description here, everything is created and it exists on a potential level. In the Brahma Jyoti, and then Lord Brahma manifest the material world from that, he's empowered to do that. So he's saying that I am not the creator, and he's giving the example of the sun. I am the creator, but I am the secondary creator. Prabhupada explains in the last paragraph of the purport to 11. One should not expect the Lord to create like a blacksmith with a hammer and other instruments. So how, when Krishna is the ultimate creator, but he doesn't create as a blacksmith creates with a hammer and bang, 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 he does everything himself. No. The Lord creates by his potencies. He has his multifarious potencies. Parasya shakti vividaya shuyate. Just as a small seed of a banyan fruit has the potency to create a big banyan tree, the Lord disseminates all varieties of seeds by his potential Brahma Jyoti, Sarodhisa. And the seeds are made to develop by the watering process of persons like Brahma. Brahma cannot create the seeds, but he can manifest the seeds into a tree. Just as a gardener helps plants and orchards to grow by the watering process. The example cited here of the sun is very appropriate. In the material world, the sun is the cause of all illumination, fire, electricity, the rays of the moon, etc. All luminaries in the sky are creations of the sun. The sun is the creation of the Brahma Jyoti, and the Brahma Jyoti is the effulgence of the Lord, thus the ultimate cause of creation is the Lord. So the creation made by Lord Brahma is called the Vishaga creation, or the secondary creation. And the creation of the Lord is the primary creation, or the Saga creation. So now Brahma, after explaining how it's Krishna, not him who is the creator, he explains what is it that makes a person not see beyond the superficial, and what makes a person to see other people and things and situations other than the Lord, see them as if they were the creator. So he says, I offer my obeisances and meditate upon Lord Krishna, Vasudev, the personality of Godhead, whose invincible potency influences them, the less intelligent class of men, to call me the supreme controller. And then in the 13th verse, the last verse we're going to read, Valajamanaya yasya stattu mikshapate muya vamohita vakatante mamahamitti dortu diya. The illusory energy of the Lord cannot take precedence, being ashamed of her position. But those who are bewildered by her always talk nonsense, being absorbed in thoughts of it is I and it is mine. In other words, it is the illusory energy, or Krishna's Maya Shakti, the power of illusion, that does not allow us to pierce the superficial curtain of existence. And we are deluded into seeing so many things going on, but we cannot see due to this curtain, Maya Javani Katsanam. We cannot see Krishna behind everything due to the curtain of Maya. But Krishna himself, this verse explains, Krishna himself can never, God can never be deluded. The illusory energy, forgetfulness, can never cover Krishna. But it is so powerful that it covers all the living entities. So two, there's a contrast here. That Valajamanaya Yasya, there's another verse in the 7th chapter that we'll refer to in a moment. Maya Paite Cha Valajamanam. Maya Paite Abhimukhe Cha Valajamanam. Very, very similar to this. That Maya flies away. She cannot put her face in front of Krishna, in front of the Lord. Maya is compared to a maidservant of the king who cannot enter into the very, very intimate and private quarters that where only the queens can go. Maya is exiled, so to speak, and she will not, cannot stand in front of Krishna. She is ashamed, Vilajamana. She cannot stand before the Lord. So on one side, the God can never be illusioned. God can never be illusioned and come to this condition in the material world. And on the other side, the living entities who are an illusion, what are their symptoms? They always talk nonsense. Being bewildered by the illusory energy, they always talk nonsense. Always absorbed in thoughts of it is I and it is mine. Everything they see in relationship to themselves, this is the very symptom of illusion. I and mine. Kartaham iti manyate. I have done this. All this is mine. But actually nothing, nothing, nothing is ours. In the sense that we come into this world with what? Not even a body, practically speaking. And that even we leave behind. None of our possessions, not our clothes, not anything, neither our bank balance, our fame, we leave everything behind. So when something is left behind, that denotes that it doesn't belong to us. But an illusion, and the illusion is thick and deep, we think that things in this world are mine, my plans, my house, my family, my this, my that. We put ourselves into these things due to illusion. And illusion is so powerful. It is so powerful. Because of our desire to enjoy, we invest our consciousness in things which are not worthy of our consciousness being invested in. This is the potency of Maya. Just like if you take something that's hot, and we, by nature, are spiritual. Like something hot has the quality. We have the quality of eternity, bliss and knowledge. When you take that hot thing and put it in contact, a small hot thing, with masses of ice, what happens to that hot thing? It loses its heating ability and quality. It itself becomes cold, although it wasn't cold. So similarly, the living entity in contact with this material nature, impelled by illusion, Maya, it embraces the prostitute of Maya, wanting to enjoy it. And the prostitute of Maya sucks out the heat of its spiritual nature and it becomes cold, dead, lifeless like matter, and therefore has to suffer as if it was matter. Torture for the soul. We lose our spiritual quality. There's nothing actually enjoyable in the material world. This is all the power of illusion. So how, I'm going to change books for a moment, just after explaining, and the symptom of the illusion is talking nonsense, thinking this is I, talking and thinking this is I and this is mine. Now, Krishnadas Kaviraj quotes this verse, the same verse, this yes, Vilajjamanaya Yasya verse. And he gives hints how we can get out of this illusion that Maya so powerfully has put in. And the hint is contained in this verse that Maya is ashamed to be before Krishna. So the solution is to always keep ourselves in the rays of Krishna's mercy, and then Maya cannot touch us. And the cold iron will be put in the hot fire of Krishna's association and mercy, and it will regain naturally its quality, spiritual qualities. So Kaviraj Goswami quotes, Krishna suryasam maya hai andhakara yahan Krishna tahan nahi maya radikara. Krishna is compared to sunshine and Maya is compared to darkness. wherever there is sunshine, there cannot be darkness. As soon as one takes to Krishna consciousness, the darkness of illusion, the influence of the external energy, will immediately vanish. And then this verse. Kulajamanaya yasya stattumichapate muya vimohita vikatante mamaha mittidurdhya. The external energy of Krishna, known as Maya, is always ashamed to stand in front of Krishna, just as darkness is ashamed to remain before the sunshine. However, that Maya bewilders unfortunate people who have no intelligence. Thus they simply boast that this material world is theirs and that they are its enjoyers. Krishna tomarahan yadi bhali ekavara maya bandha hoite Krishna tare kare para. But one is immediately freed from the clutches of Maya if he seriously and sincerely says, "My dear Lord Krishna, although I have forgotten you for so many long years in the material world, today I am surrendering unto you. I am your sincere and serious servant. Please engage me in your service." After. Then Krishna's reply to that, quoted from Ramayana: "It is my vow that if one only once seriously surrenders unto me, saying, 'My dear Lord, from this day I am yours,' and prays to me for courage, I shall immediately award courage to that person, and he will always remain safe from that time on." What is the cause of this entanglement of the living entity in turning away from Krishna? Due to bad association, the living entity desires material happiness. This is Kaviraj Goswami. This is, by the way, the teachings of to Sanatana Goswami by Mahaprabhu. Due to bad association, the living entity desires material happiness, liberation, or merging into the impersonal aspect of the Lord, or he engages in mystic yoga for material power. If such a person actually becomes intelligent, he takes to Krishna consciousness by engaging himself in intense devotional service. Whether one desires everything or nothing, we just heard this verse, akama sava kama va moksha kama daradi tivrena bhakti yogeni acheta purusha para. Whether one desires everything or nothing, or whether he desires to merge into the existence of the Lord, he is intelligent only if he worships Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by rendering transcendental loving service. If those who desire material enjoyment or merging into the existence of the Absolute Truth engage in the Lord's transcendental loving service, they will immediately attain shelter at Lord Krishna's lotus feet, although they did not ask for it. Krishna is therefore very merciful. Krishna says, Kaviraj Goswami tells us, Krishna kohe, ama bhaje mage vishaya sukha, amrita chadi visha mage e bhaga murka. Krishna says, if one engages in my transcendental loving service, but at the same time wants the opulence of material enjoyment, he is very, very foolish. Indeed, he is just like a person who gives up ambrosia to drink poison. But since I am very intelligent, Krishna says, why should I give this fool material prosperity? Instead, I shall induce him to take the nectar of the shelter of my lotus feet, and make him forget illusory material enjoyment. Whenever Krishna is requested to fulfill one's desires, he undoubtedly does so, but he does not award anything which, after being enjoyed, will cause someone to petition him again and again to fulfill further desires. When one has other desires but engages in the Lord's service, Krishna forcibly gives one shelter at his lotus feet. where one will forget his other desires. When someone engages in Lord Krishna's devotional service for the satisfaction of the senses and instead acquires a taste to serve Krishna, he gives up his material desires and willingly offers himself as an eternal servant of Krishna. So, Kaviraj Goswami goes on, but we'll stop here. So by Krishna's mercy, if one takes one sincere step to Krishna, Krishna will help so much. Okay, thank you very much. No time for questions. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Narada Muni Lord Brahma ki jai, Sri Sukadeva Goswami Maharaj Prakrit ki jai, Sri Sita Goswami, all the sages of Navasharanya ki jai, Nitai Gaur Premanandi Adare Gaur Bhaktivinda ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.